We are here on the Soccer OG. A lot of ground to cover. We'll get that here on episode 151. As always, a reminder to rate, review, download, subscribe, and tell a friend. A happy belated Mother's Day to everyone out there. To all the moms. To my mom, Conchi, and Sue, who lives with us. And the best mom of all, my wife, Helen. I'm saying that because she's eating in the next room. But I meant it with all my heart. And we should keep Mother's Day and get rid of Valentine's Day and all Father's Day. Mother's Day is the best one. And make every day a Mother's Day. We will have Jonathan Tannenwall joining us here in the business end. Very excited about that. Covers the sport for the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is really the number one newspaper covering soccer in this country. He is the goalkeeper on Twitter. Great handle. I wish I was able to grab that before he did. We will have a discussion in stoppage time about how playoffs are really great. Notice what's happening in Liga MX, American sports playoff, as it applies to the Major League Soccer Cup playoffs will be coming on later this year, and why the expansion of maybe not ideal, maybe there are too many teams there. It's still going to be a lot of fun. A lot of topics to get into. I will give you my take, what stood out this week. Coming up here in moments, the Soccer OG. Let's go. Way too excited to talk with you this week. There's so much to get to. Ahead in stoppage time, I'll be discussing playoffs. I'll leave my Liga MX discussion for then. Again, in the business end, John Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer covers the national teams. Will join us. We'll talk about the development of young players, which we both agree, and is the reason I brought him on, is the brightest, most shining thing we have in American soccer right now. So we'll get that. Everything's coming down. Some really crazy images over the weekend with clubs confronting fans. The most peculiar one was AC Milan and their ultras, the Curva Sud. I mean, the players were summoned over. And then Pioli and them all sat there nodding their head as they were almost, it seemed like, I didn't hear it was being said, but almost like a lecture. And the players just looked terrified, as they probably should be when, I mean, they've had a great season. They've had two horrible performances against Inter in the semifinals. And then over the weekend, I guess was it Spezia? It was a little bit of the tail wagging the dog as it applies to a soccer team. Supporters are the lifeblood and they have to be listened to, but this was just something else. And that group was odd. Just was weird optics. Then you have Barcelona celebrating. I got to say, man, I know I'm going to get some heat for this. That ring around the rosy celebration for Barcelona is just, it could infuriate you, I can imagine, but there's no excuse. They were celebrating winning the Spanish title. And that's why we're talking about these Espanyol supporters. We should be talking about this incredible achievement for Barcelona. That they have, you know, they still have to deal with their financial issues, but they've been able to rise all the way above on the up and up, using the players they had, developing young players. Barcelona next year should be really exciting as they'll be back in the Champions League. But it was Barcelona celebrating, which Xavi would later say they probably shouldn't have done it. And these Espanyol fans, just so you know, Barcelona Espanyol are both in the city of Barcelona. Espanyol kind of aligns more with the rest of Spain. Barcelona kind of with the Catalan side. I don't want to use the word separatist, but those are encouraged to have Barcelona and Catalan as an independent state. So there's a lot of history there, and I don't want to touch on it because it's pretty serious stuff. But some Espanyol fans ran on there to confront the Barcelona players. I just hate to have to bow down to these fans, right? You don't want to dictate things. But at the end of the day, if you want to avoid these entanglements, you think one step ahead. And Barcelona probably shouldn't have celebrated there. They have every right to, but you know, get that off the field because it's about the player safety, no? We don't want anyone to get hurt. There's some wackos out there. If they can have access to the field, then there's every reason not to do it. We want everyone to be safe. But that really is what certainly stood out. The German race, it's starting to feel, you know, Bayern wins their game 6-0. Dortmund scored, what, 4 or 5 goals in their game. I mean, just two blowouts. And it really hit me at that moment that both these teams are going to win out and Dortmund are going to finish a point off the pace because they dropped points to Bochum. So it is, Bayern's schedule is a little more favorable. I mean, Bayern just got to play Schalke. By the way, there's some bad teams in the Bundesliga. Schalke, some of those teams at the bottom are bad. Hertha, bad. I mean, the top teams in Germany, very good. Leipzig, I got to watch their game. And Christopher Nkunku, amazing performance. So there's a lot of good in the Bundesliga. But some of those bad, I mean, look at these scores. So we'll have our fingers crossed. Hopefully they're able to continue that. The best thing I saw over the weekend, to use a Scott Van Pelt line, was Feyenoord winning their first championship, what, since 2017, the Dutch Eredivisie. And it's been a great story with Santi Jimenez, the Mexican international's father, played in Mexico for a long time. And he had, what, 25, an incredible amount of goals. He's on that team. I forgot, Marcos Lopez, who used to play with the San Jose Earthquakes, also on that team. And then Dennis De Closa, who has been a director, technical director, in Major League Soccer, notably with the Galaxy, he runs that club. So a lot of U.S. ties. So to see a club that's so, I mean, that place was a cauldron. Wouldn't it have been great to be in Rotterdam this past week with regards to being part of the Feyenoord celebration? So well done. I was really happy to see that. What else are we talking about? English Premier League. We'll talk with Jonathan a bit, but those three Americans in the promotion playoffs, Ethan Horvath and Luton Town, lost to Sunderland and Lyndon Gooch. Both of them started the game. Zach Steffen tied Coventry, I think, scoreless tie. We'll talk Zach Steffen because Jonathan Tanwell has an article about him. To me, that would be the best story, and you'll hear why in our conversation if he can get into the Premier League. And now he's still a Manchester City player, but we'll give you some news from that article that suggests that maybe his future is with Middlesbrough. On the other side of that, Leeds, Patrick Bamford, my goodness, missed a penalty. They led the game, and then they trailed Newcastle 2-1, and they did get a goal late. So Leeds still have a flicker. They get a point. They look pretty good there. They've actually looked okay under Sam Allardyce. I mean, he made a change at goalkeeper. Melier was a disaster at the end there. And it seems like he's getting his selections right. But also, something about Sam Allardyce. Sorry, I'm dragging on here. There is these old videos of what current managers look like in their playing days. There's a photo of Sam Allardyce. Go on the internet, pull Sam Allardyce in his playing days. The guy looks like James Bond. He's this good-looking, got the mustache, the long hair. I mean, just absolutely dreamy. I never thought I'd say that about Sam Allardyce. And then you look at him now, you can say he has some features. He's just a bit older, you know? The skin's, in his younger days, Sam Allardyce was, he's a good-looking dude. One of the many things I never thought I would say on this podcast. But there you have it. So Leeds are in 18th place. I feel a little better about them staying up than I did a week ago, 2 weeks ago. So Everton are 32, Leeds at 31, Leicester lost on Monday, they're 30. Southampton's already relegated. So three teams for one spot. Leeds travel to West Ham. West Ham, that's my club. That's a place where they can get a result, and then they finish at home to Tottenham. Everton travel to Wolves and then finish to Bournemouth. So Everton has the edge in the schedule in the sense that they might be playing teams with not much to play for, right? Both Wolves and Bournemouth are clear of relegation issues. So it's going to be interesting. I'll stick by Leeds getting relegated. I hope they can stay up for the sake of the two American players that play there. And then Weston McKennie, who's on loan. I don't think he'd be with Leeds regardless. And let's hear it for Notts County. Enough of Wrexham. How about Notts County getting promoted to the Football League? What a great day. So both go up. The Soccer OG Podcast. Rate, review, download, subscribe, tell a friend. We'll be back with The Business End and Jonathan Tanwell. We are here in The Business End, and a gentleman should have had much sooner on this podcast. I told him that before we went on the air. Jonathan Tanwell of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We love what the Inquirer does. He's also the goalkeeper on Twitter. How did you get that handle? How was that available? Were you there Twitter from the beginning? I mean,
well, let me start with this. I think you and I have known each other since before I had the Twitter handle. It's been a while. Yeah. It's great to be here.
I remember we were early on in my ESPN days, and there was one in particular. I think we were doing a story on Bob Lee, correct?
Or yes.
Yes, yeah. I remember that. You were there for like a couple days.
I've been in and around MLS since I was in high school, going to DC United games as a fan growing up. You know Dave Johnson.
Of course.
I'm sure. And I would always rush out the door of RFK over to the press entrance, which I'm sure you've been in many times, you know, where that little elevator is, to say hi to him after games. And he's known me since I was in high school. And here I am now, you know, doing all the stuff that I'm doing.
Wow, which is amazing.
A tangent and a half, I'm sure. But to answer your question, the Twitter handle was actually not my idea. The Twitter handle was the idea of a former boss of mine who was very SEO minded and thought that if anybody searched for the phrase, that it would come up with me. And I don't know whether it actually works that way, but I have it and I've kept it ever since. So
very nice. There I am. Very nice. I'm just envious. But there it is. It's great to say that. By the way, RFK, I do miss going there. The only times when you go into that broadcast area, you have to duck because there's this old school design.
I've hit my head a few times on that. Yep.
And I would always think about it. And by the end of it, I wouldn't hit my head, but the thought of it and reminding myself, duck, duck, kind of drove me crazy. But even though it was beat up, some odors that would kind of hit your nostrils from time to time, it was a nice old little lady had some great memories.
I grew up in D.C., not like in a very nice part of D.C., but in the district. My mother's from Alexandria, Virginia. She went to Washington Senators games at RFK's predecessor with her father in the 1950s. I never went to a football game there, admittedly. I went to a lot of baseball games there with my mom, you know, over the years when I'd be home for the summer. But I really learned the game of soccer as a cultural institution in the bouncing bleachers at RFK, surrounded by a crowd. And you, having been at LAFC, will I know understand this. And you were at RFK back in the day too. When you get a crowd that diverse.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's, you feel it and you know it, and it's something really special. And it made for an atmosphere between, it was an old stadium, it was a circular stadium, which we don't do anymore. It had these concrete overhangs over the whole thing, and then again, sort of the upper deck sort of overlapped over the lower deck. And it was an atmosphere that we'll never have anymore in American soccer, because nobody's going to build a stadium like that anymore. But a real diverse atmosphere too.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of places in MLS where it's not that way now, and I miss it. But LAFC, it is that way.
Yeah, but you speak out of both sides of your mouth. If they might show you, RFK, how not to build a stadium, because architecturally it just doesn't make any sense in 2023. But right, those images of the DC United support groups, the Barra Brava bump, and it's bouncing. That was like really the image that I could best describe the early years of Major League Soccer. And part of it is because there wasn't people showing up at games. But every time you turn on a DC game, you would be comforted knowing there's a big unit of fans there, support with the Incha style, singing and dancing every time you saw a DC United game. So not to be lost. By the way, is RFK still, they haven't knocked it down.
It's still standing. They have taken the seats out and they are selling them for a lot of money to people who want to buy them. They were selling the turnstiles too.
Oh, nice.
And I was sorely tempted, but it's $2,000, so I'm not going to do it.
What a showpiece that would be at the Tannenwald household.
Yeah, no, it's...
You could put it at your front door.
Right. I live in an apartment in Philly, so I don't have the room for half the stuff that my parents want me to get out of their storage closet. There's a lot of... it's funny. I actually, a couple days before you and I were talking, I got asked to do for a piece that may or may not be out by the time this goes to air. I don't know. Do a piece on my top 10 stadiums in MLS, present day. And I did my top 10, and LAFC is one of them, and a bunch of others that aren't too surprising. But I put the honorable mention at the end. I said, there will never be another place like RFK again because of the bouncing bleachers, which for people who don't know,
and I remember how it sounded. Those things were it was great.
The bouncing bleachers at RFK were a relic of the days when there was baseball and football, gridiron football in the 60s and 70s at that stadium. And so it was a section like at Veterans Stadium, Three Rivers, Riverfront, all the stadiums of that era on wheels that would move around to make a baseball diamond or a football horseshoe.
Made sense.
And because it was on, and when DC United built Audi Field, the fans actually protested quite a bit that they did not make the supporters end metal. It's concrete. Knees can tell you from experience, jumping up and down on concrete and jumping up and down on metal that gives a little bit is a different experience.
You're like, my Achilles are absolutely shot. Yeah. Oh, wow. I remember because the Washington Commanders, then the Redskins had their, I would get familiar with their ring of fame and the players there. You'd always see them there. So there was always those NFL connections, which were very old school, you know, the NFL films, that kind of stuff was very cool. You could hear a John Fashenda here, the John Riggins carrying down at RFK State. That's terrible. I did not think I was going to do a Fashenda impression nor talk about RFK Stadium, but here we are, Jonathan.
Well,
I got a good place where you could launch off because I did read, check out the Philadelphia Inquirer, wherever you are. You get great content from Jonathan and a variety of great writers. And you have one out on Zach Steffen because we want to talk about the American players. And Zach Steffen played this weekend, Middlesbrough against Coventry. It was scoreless. Gets a little bit closer to promotion, but we don't know if he'll be with Middlesbrough. But you did mention in your article that he said, I don't think I'll go back to Manchester City. He's on loan. And what a great story that would be if he could get there and then Middlesbrough, for some reason, make a permanent move, which would make sense to have him back in there after everything's been. That had to be an interesting story. I know it was a Philadelphia connection, but again, with what you guys are doing there, you get stories that are interesting to a national media, maybe because that part of the country is so interesting and a hotbed as well for soccer in a variety of reasons. But what did you sense there from Zach, this bit of a revival project after missing the World Cup? I mean, it's a very interesting story that you told well.
Well, and that was part of why I wanted to talk to him. Obviously, I've known him for a bit because he's from here. He comes home every once in a while. He grew up in the Union's Youth Academy. And when he said that he didn't want to go back to Manchester City, I just sort of stopped in my tracks.
That's a big one.
And I said to him, you did tell Manchester City that before you told me, right? And he said, yes, he did.
Yeah.
But no, I think he was really in a down place when he didn't make the World Cup team. And it took him a while to sort through why. And I wasn't sure he was going to go into too much depth about why he felt he didn't make it. I had a hunch since last summer when he pulled out of the summer camp and tour, those three games for family and personal reasons. I had wondered if that would have an effect. It seems that it might have, which is not good.
It's not good, but it gives I think because I was living in fear, it was a really bad reason for Greg Berhalter not to include him. But I guess I could see Greg Berhalter explaining, these guys have been here the whole time. You have it. I got to go with those, even though
I wouldn't have agreed with it either. Now, if the theory was, Matt Turner's going to be my guy and there's no point in taking you as a backup, I would have come a little closer to agreeing with that. But I still would have said, if I was a player, I would have said, I'll go because I'd like to be at a World Cup. Thank you very much. I hope that Zach gets his chance with the national team again, because I think that at his peak, he's a really great player. But when he's not at his peak and he's out of rhythm, he can struggle because so much of his game is distribution based, not just shot stopping. But I think back to the US-Mexico game in Cincinnati. It was probably the best game he played for the national team. And seeing him, I wrote about it that night. I should have written about Christian Pulisic in the t-shirt, but I wrote about Steffen instead. And I said, that's the level he can reach if he's allowed to. And unfortunately, he hasn't gotten back there yet since. with the national team.
If he can get promoted, I mean, he has had a nice resume. I mean, just the fact that he took the field for Man City, it almost feels like it never happened, that was like a science fiction movie, because Americans abroad that's come off the boil. We were at a hot, hot boil, thankfully, right before the World Cup. We're off the boil after the World Cup. So this is, a good time for it. But, you know, seeing an FA Cup, whatever, was it semi or a quarter, and he's out there, you're like, it's pretty, I mean, especially now with Man City being the best club in the galaxy or whatever, however far and wide they play soccer. I've not seen anyone like that, and I anticipate they win every trophy that they're still competing for. But that is, if he can kind of, you know, put on the back end a promotion, even without a promotion of Middlesbrough, good season against a team that has Premier-like qualities. They obviously have to get better if they get there, and maybe he's part of it. That's a nice arc, you know? It's a nice arc for someone that maybe a lot of people left for dead a few months ago. And it'd be interesting what his summer looks like with the U.S. national team.
I think so. I would hope that he's – I mean, we suspect – we don't know, but we suspect that the Nations League is going to be the A squad and the Gold Cup is going to be the B squad. As far as I'm concerned, I'd send the Olympic team to the Gold Cup because they need some reps together. And
there's going to be a lot of crossover, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, yeah. And, you know, it's crazy to think that it's May 15th already because it hasn't hit 90 degrees yet here in Philadelphia, which is fine with me because I hate the excessively hot weather.
Oh, it's coming.
I know it's coming.
You might have a hot September. That's it all even out.
I think we'll see. And I think one of the things that it reminds of is the U.S. men's program has some depth now. Everybody complains when, oh my God, what do you mean they took this guy or that guy, and not that guy and not the other guy? Well, you and I were been around for long enough to know that at plenty of times over the years, we knew who the 23 guys were a year in advance because there wasn't anybody else. There's some real depth now.
It was slim pickings. That was pretty dire. You're like, man, this is pretty cut and dry, isn't it? I mean, they're going to pick him, and it's different.
When people say to me, what is it going to take for the U.S. men's program to get to the elite level? Here I go in air quotes on the radio. I say to people, look at the U.S. women, and here's why. It's not just because of Tobin Heath's individual skills, Alex Morgan's goal scoring, Becky Sauerbrunn as a center back, etc. It's because the U.S. women's program has still, the rest of the world is catching up, but has still the most depth in it of any national team program in the world, because Title IX produces millions of high school kids who become hundreds of thousands of collegians, who become into the NWSL, who become then 30 people at the national team. And you need that much depth to be France, to be Germany, to be England, et cetera. And in the U.S. now, we're finally starting to marshal the depth that exists in men's soccer in the country.
Yeah, I think it's refreshing that most positions are up for grab. We just talked about the goalkeeper. Matt Turner's the number one, but he has guys pushing him. Center back, I don't know. There's like seven or eight guys pushing him. Hopefully it gets resolved at forward. I mean, we're flawed, obviously. We're not, but even in the positions like winger, where we're a little better off, you see, okay, these are our starters, but the guys right behind them, you know, if they hit a nice vein of form, they might be the guys. And I don't think you could have ever said that. You could probably list the starting 11 for national teams. It was good, but it certainly feels like it's coming in a lot more ways. I don't know, that maybe that's a good launch point to kind of discuss what's happening. Because you reached out to me and we were discussing some of the young players going to the under-20s. That's going to be starting here in a week. The U.S. Open up with Ecuador, Fiji. Why am I forgetting Slovakia. So, I mean, they've made some quarterfinals. And this is, again, this is a squad that is it more talented than the past teams? It's hard to say, but I think for the first time when you'd see an under 20, most observers, even people like us, you know who the guy at the top is, you know who the guys on the fringe are, because we're just they're in professional football. They are playing important roles. I mean, we had this discussion at MLS. You know, the Fire didn't release a couple of their guys, and a couple other clubs did the same. And that's because they are important cogs to that team, and they felt they couldn't release them. So Brian Gutierrez staying with the Fire as opposed to going to the under-20s and playing full games here in the meantime. He's gonna make the most of the situation. It's tough that they did it, but so many good players not there, and yet they are able to field this really strong team. And this is one of maybe the most compelling story for American soccer is the fact that we are developing players that are coming to MLS that are players. This is on the men's side, obviously, because I think you said the women have fleshed it out a lot better and is really competitive. But now they're also, you see kids seeing a pathway to make money, and they, you know, to make some money at an earlier age. So we'll see. I get the feeling they're going to win one of these. Maybe this is the year. At least maybe make a semi or a final. But the depth there is good. And I want to scream to the mountaintops. And when you get on Twitter, that's what people want to talk about too, Jonathan.
Yes. First of all, let me read the money quote from Mikey Veras after he announced the roster. He was talking about Brian Gutierrez and Paxton Aronson and Jalen Neal, yeah, of the Galaxy, and a few others.
Yeah, now Jalen Neal looks amazing with the guy, but he's not going to go. He should. He looks like a finished product. And Paxton Aronson, I think, is the guy they're going to miss the most. But he really, yeah, he could. But anyway,
if Frankfurt wasn't in the German Cup final, I think he'd probably be there.
But the fact that they say we need him, right? That's pretty refreshing. And
Mikey Veras said, "We're disappointed that some players weren't released, but at the same time, our number one priority here is individual player development. So we're also proud of the fact that these players have become so important during the cycle that they're no longer viewed as releasable for this type of tournament." Now, it's been pointed out, if the European season was ending, club season was ending on schedule, maybe some of these guys would be available because the Qatar World Cup,
yeah,
threw everything, you know, sideways, calendar-wise. But I think about, and I know this is the centerpiece of what you and I want to talk about. It's something you talk about, the conversation on Twitter, the demand for the content on the youth prospect, and so on. I've been saying this for a long time, and I've said it as somebody who writes a lot, not just about soccer, but about college basketball here in Philadelphia, which is a big deal, obviously has been for decades, and is a big reason why I decided to live here instead of going back to DC. The business of content about recruiting in college sports is a big, big business. The business of prospects in American sports is a big business. If soccer can harness that.
I was watching SportsCenter, NBA, and we know all the college, right, players coming in the NBA next season. Right. You get excited about 20 picks.
There's no reason why soccer cannot harness that. On top of which, the kids can turn pro as young as 15 or 16. And to give them a pair of shoes when they're 17 years old isn't illegal like it is in college basketball and college football.
That's a good point.
So if we can marshal this, and MLS academies are starting to marshal this, it has a lot of benefits. One, it makes money for you and for me and Keith Costigan, who we both know well, who does a lot of stuff in this space, and a lot of other people. Two is, it might just convince some more kids to play soccer professionally, especially in the inner city.
There it is. There it
is. Why? Because you can turn pro at a younger age in soccer than you can in gridiron football and hockey and baseball. Basketball is going to get to 18. It sort of is already in a way. But, you know, you can turn pro in soccer at 16, 17, or whatever. And in the case of the Union, if you get into their youth academy and their high school, if you turned out to not be good enough to turn pro at 18, you're going to have a good enough high school education out of their academy that you're going to be able to go to a good college, which is why David Vasquez, who grew up in LA, has played for the US under 17s, is in the Union's youth academy. And the Union said, we'll pay the fine because this kid's good enough. I'm writing some about this in the coming weeks in some greater depth because it caused quite a stir in Southern California. And in Philadelphia and in MLS headquarters.
Hands off, Jonathan. You guys have enough talent in Philly and
there was some compensation delivered to LAFC for the purpose. I can say that much because that is on the record. But the family, David Vasquez's family and Jack McGlynn's family and a few others, looked at the Union setup and said, this is what we want our kid to go into. And so that counts for something.
Different strokes for different folks.
And so here's now where it all comes. I know the Galaxy have a high school setup, but it's not quite the same. The Red Bulls and NYCFC and Dallas and RSL have strong academy setups, but the Union have really, with the high, the residential setup with the high school that they have taken it to another level that has become really attractive for kids across the country who also now see a pathway to play. If you go to some of these other clubs, you don't know if you're actually going to play for them. If you go to the Union, you're going to play. And what it then comes to with a kid like Jack McGlynn, who I've been writing about all year, because he's an unbelievable talent.
Love Jack
McGlynn. Another kid out of the Union Academy who's not just backs. For how many years did we see high schools and youth academies and college programs producing a bunch of red-blooded, straight-line running central midfielders and center backs? You know,
that was our sweet spot.
as great as some of the World Cup teams of the past were, somebody asked me whether, you know, how does the 2022 men's World Cup team compare with the 2002 team that had a lot of talent, had Donovan Beasley, Reyna, et cetera, that went to the quarterfinals of the World Cup? I said, as great as that team was, this one's miles better. The whole talent now is better than it's ever been.
And it's the
Without question.
Yeah, it's the technical skills, like what you're saying right. about McGlynn, because those are the kind of players we wouldn't produce. Or right. Brian Gutierrez, I'm sitting here. This is a number 10. We don't do number 10s in the United States.
And we might not have gone into the right immigrant communities to get Brian Gutierrez and a few other people into the system, in air quotes, over the years,
yeah.
like people are finally willing to do now, thank heavens, because it's taken long enough, hasn't it? And then it gets to MLS headquarters. And this is something that I've written a number of times and have talked to you about. I wish that MLS would market itself more as the next, and the moment to do this is now. It has been since last fall to right now.
Yeah.
That MLS would market itself as, if you want to know who's going to play in the World Cup in the United States in 2026, they are in MLS right now.
How about that, huh?
And I've said this to people on Twitter, and people come, the Euro snobs come back at me and say, "Now, what do you mean? They're not going to be in MLS in 2026. They got to get out of here." Yes, I agree with you. They're not going to be here in 2026. I said they're here now.
They're here now.
Today.
That's it.
Because they're just turning pro and they're young now.
Yeah. I think the 2026 World Cup roster is going to look pretty different. You're going to have some holdovers. And there's going to be, it's going to have a same blueprint, and these players are going into their prime. But what something we've discussed is the next wave of players pushing them. I think there's going to be some positions where guys move ahead, where it will look a little bit different. And I mean, just a quick, the Philadelphia Union, McGlynn, just guys have had a taste of that academy to know that it's the real deal. You know, Austin Trussey obviously went through Colorado now in Europe, Mark McKenzie, the yeah. Aronsons, the Sullivans. I mean, it's good fan. I mean, Quinn Sullivan's little brother.
Quinn Sullivan's younger brother turns pro. He's already getting chased by Dortmund.
I mean, he's the kind of guy you say he's probably there in 2026. So, right. Man, that's a long list. There's like 10, 12.
But I just pulled up last fall's World Cup squad. Sean Johnson came through MLS. Matt Turner came through MLS. Aaron Long came through MLS. Shaq Moore came through MLS. Ream Scally came through an MLS academy. Yedlin, Zimmerman, Aronson, Acosta, Adams, McKenney through an MLS academy, even though he didn't turn pro here. Roldan, Ferreira, Morris, Pulisic, briefly with the Union's academy back in the day before he went to PA Classics. Reyna, NYCFC. Sargent, we know if St. Louis City had had an academy at the time, he would have come up through that. Same with Ream. Weah, the Red Bulls. Bright, the Galaxy. So the on-the-field opportunity is there, and the marketing opportunity is there. And by the way, not just for Americans and not just for Canadians.
Yeah, we forget the Canadians.
For Jamaicans, for Costa Rica, for Venezuela, for Colombia, for now Argentina. Who the hell would have thought 20 years ago that a guy from MLS would have made an Argentina World Cup roster, won the whole shebang, and gotten on the field?
I think there's two or three Colombians in MLS right now that would play for Colombia in 2026. If they qualify, they should qualify.
And if John Duran, who's now
John Duran's going to be in the World Cup, probably right. He's on his way.
MLS should be more willing to say, We developed them. We sold them on for a lot of money. And here come the next ones.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they're willing to do it because, and you're in LA, and anybody listening to this in Philly is going to yell at me when I say this. What would they rather market? The Aronsons and the Sullivans and the McGlynns, or the guy whose goal had the most, one play, had the most social impressions in the history of Major League Soccer,
yeah.
And everybody went ballistic. And yeah. That was Gareth Bale.
Well, Jonathan, I would say, why can't we have both? Why can't we? I think there's room, but sure. There needs to be coverage. And I agree with you. That's a great, not only the saying why you should do it, but even coining that little expression, the 2026 World Cup national team resides here, is really interesting. And it's like, it's overwhelming how many players, because now that I get to cover it, it's like every team, Noel Buck, another one pops up.
Yeah.
Just look at that roster that's going there. It's top technical level players that we've really not seen. And the competition's going to push them.
If you market it now, as you and I have been saying, and if you're the league needs to be okay with saying, and they might not still be here in 2026. Because that is the nature of the sport.
Don't say it. Just let the people's imagination go.
But here's when Brendan Aaronson went to Salzburg for $6 million plus sell-ons plus. I said to people, this is a big deal. And unfortunately, it happened coming out of the pandemic. So not as many people had been able to watch him in person as we would have liked. And Paxton Aaronson went a year earlier than the union planned to Frankfurt because Frankfurt came in with a huge amount of money for him. But lost my train of thought, so I'm going to try to catch
you're
it
talking
back.
About Paxton Aaronson.
Yeah, no, it's
going a year earlier.
Well, okay, I know it was when Brendan went for $6 million to Salzburg, I said, that's a lot of money because the union had never sold a guy for that much before. And people looked at me and said, yeah, $6 million in the context of Bryce Harper and Joel Embiid and Jalen Hurts or whatever is not a lot of money. Okay. Brendan Aaronson goes to Leeds United for $30 million. I come back and say, is $30 million enough for you? And now we're talking. Because I have not
the numbers,
seen.
Yeah, they used to get American North American talent for pennies on the dollar, and that's changed right. A lot in the last year.
It's starting to hit on the finally, after all these years, the gap between the American and the Brazilian player of similar talents, transfer value, money wise, is closing.
That's a great stat too.
And it's
true.
Right. And it's not just selling guys for jerseys because the guys are good enough to play. And the smart teams in your people used to say, I'm going to raise another name that you and I both know. Eric Winalda loves to say that MLS needs to go to a winter schedule because it's going to help the global transfer market. It probably would. I don't think it's worth the cost because it snows where I live. But it probably would. But there are also enough smart teams in Europe now that know how to structure a deal to get their guy 6 months early or whatever, have the deal, he plays out the rest of the year in MLS, he goes to Germany at the end of the calendar year for $1 million or $2 million less, then there's the sell-on fee, and it all works out for everybody in terms of the amounts of money over. So it's and then you get when the guy makes the next move, as Brendan did, and now he's playing in the Premier League, and he hasn't played well lately because he needs to go sit on a beach. He needs literally to go sit on the beach in Seattle City.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
For 2 weeks and rest.
But isn't that crazy? All these guys that had a full World Cup and from Messi on down, they're all hitting walls. They're all hitting walls.
And it's Aaronson's first year in the Premier League, and Leeds is struggling with relegation and all this other stuff. But in those first few months with Brendan was at Leeds, I've never seen a soccer player captivate people in Philadelphia the way that he did. Captivate the soccer community as a whole, whether you were a Leeds fan or not, whether you were a Union fan or not, everybody was talking about him. And if he can get back after the summer to a high level, I think everybody's going to be talking about him again. And one of these years, I don't know when, Zach and Brendan and all the guys have told me, they are begging for a big game at Lincoln Financial Field. It's up with the calendar because it's got to be in the summer or it's got to be in the spring or whatever. You know, it can't be during the football season, you know, the NFL season, you know, when some of the friendly windows are. I think Germany's coming over in the fall or whatever it is. I heard that was reported a while back.
Yeah.
But they can't play at Lincoln Financial Field during the NFL season. They can't play at any NFL stadium during the NFL season. If they could get a big game, maybe Copa America in 2024 at the link with Aronson, Stefan, McKenzie, Pulisic, the place is going to go nuts. To have all these
the
guys
Philadelphia
come home,
homecoming. That would be that's the only that may be the only city they can pull it off.
Well,
you know, maybe if you include some of the, you know, the neighboring areas and, you know, New Jersey so fertile, but maybe some guys could do that for at MetLife or something. But right.
Did you do the Gold Cup in 15 when the final was here?
No, I did not. I was in there before. I will say this, Lincoln Financial Field, the first ever broadcast was at the Champions World Series.
Yes,
and I was on the call. It was Barcelona and I should remember this.
It's Barcelona, Man U. That might have been when we first met because I was still in college back
then. Yes, and I would grind Philadelphia Eagle fans. Go, no, the first broadcast I did, it was soccer. They're like, no, it was Eagles-Giants. I go, no, it wasn't.
And believe it or not, it's 20 years now. I can't believe it's been 20 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Since then. But it's a great stadium for soccer.
It's Philadelphia's just amazing. And if we had more Philadelphias out there, wow, would we be further advanced in this academy? It's just the proof of concept time and time again. That was very interesting what you told me about, you know, these players going there because this is where I want to be. It's the same recruiting tool to go, this is the best. This is where you should be. So come join us. And, you know, maybe that, you know, with the regional, with the homegrown rules, and you know, maybe that changes a bit where these players can go to where they feel there is the best fit, which I think would raise the standard, but I mean, we're on a great track as is. I'm happy to see how it's developing and getting more games for players. You mentioned the players seeing soccer as a pipeline to becoming professional quicker. And like, I look at two players, Erling Haaland and Jude Bellingham. And if they were grown up in the States, they wouldn't be playing soccer because they're these elite athletes with big frames that could probably be, a basketball or a football. You know, if Haaland looks like he could be an NFL receiver of the highest caliber. I don't know how his hands are, but everything
else. His dad probably could have been too.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the guys that you dream of that you could develop in the United States. And the idea that some kid out there is going, I'm going to go soccer. I'm 15. I like the sport. And there's this contract on the table because people are paying notice of what I am doing.
Think about what DeMarcus Beasley and what he went through, you know, coming out of Indiana, where they probably didn't have a ton of. And I'll give you the best example.
Indiana, he's not going to come out, you know.
Give you the best example. Eddie Johnson, who you remember very well.
Yes.
We weren't, as a collective soccer nouse, we weren't ready for him.
No, that's a great shout. That took the people covering soccer by surprise. This kid from the inner city, great athlete, who played great soccer and was on a rocket ship there for a couple of years.
Yeah. And now I haven't caught up with him in a few years, but now if a kid like him was coming through, the structure would be there to really make the most of his natural talent and develop it into something even better than a guy who was already pretty good.
You know what, Jonathan? I'm gonna see if I could reach out to Eddie John. That'd be a good guest to get here. And maybe a very interesting story to tell. But this is, I mean, it's exciting for MLS. It's exciting for the U.S. men's national team. It's exciting for players coming through, because I mean, even now, I see this. I don't know how legitimate the rumor is, but you know, Jesus Ferreira, who is viewed as this flawed forward, getting interest from Napoli for big money. And that's a guy that you wouldn't put like on the same level. Maybe if you feel like he makes good money in MLS, he'll stay here. And maybe he's not this incredible finisher. Yet Napoli And, you know, the ownership has said they want an American, but they're not just bringing an American there for the sake of having an American. There's intent. He has to play. Otherwise, it'll be an abject failure. So there's intention for him to come in and find his way. So that has to be the best scouting club, because they have located this talent like Osimhen and Kavar that were available to everyone. So it says a lot about the club, too. But it's just the width and breadth of interest for younger players. And he's 22 is it's intoxicating, because it's like a bottomless cup, it seems like, right now, the way we're covering it.
And I went to my bosses before the season, because every year I hear from them and I hear from fans, there's nobody on the union who I've heard of, which is code for saying, why did DC United sign Wayne Rooney, who I've heard of, and not the union? I told people at the time, and I was a little skeptical of Rooney coming over. He proved me wrong, and he's proved me wrong a second time by willingly come here to coach. I said, I'm not sure you want Rooney. Well, what about Zlatan? I want Zlatan. I get you want Zlatan. I can say this now. Zlatan never made the playoffs with the Galaxy.
He was still good. He was good. He just was
great player.
Yeah, but he played well here. It just was a weird. He just wasn't around long enough.
There's if you put all your chips on one guy, it might not work.
Yeah.
But I've said to people, okay, you want a guy to know on the union. You're not happy that Brendan Aaronson left when he did, because he was starting to catch fire here among people, and then he's gone. Paxton Aaronson leaves yearly. Okay, I'm going to tell you now, and this was back in January, about Jack McGlynn. Because I knew he was going to be here all year unless some European team in the middle, if he'd gone to the under-20 World Cup and some European team saw him and came in with a ridiculous amount of money, which could happen. But I've said he's probably going to be here all year. Watch him all year. You can enjoy watching him all year. And here he is. And MLS doesn't do enough developing stars. Now, granted, maybe it's going to be hamstrung in doing so because they're not going to be here forever. And American sports fans have it in mind that their favorite guy is going to play for a team for a decade, even though most players in the NFL, their career is 4 years or whatever it is. You know, you expect that somebody's going to be Bryce Harper and sign here for 10 years and $450 million or whatever. I get that. But if I've done one thing in my years at the Inquirer in terms of things that I've tried to teach people in the public to understand about soccer, it is a virtue to sell players to Europe for a large amount of money. It is not a vice, even though it's not what you're used to.
Yeah, I think they get it. And I believe Major League Soccer is still going to find a way to tell the stories and promote its league. It's like, I think this Apple situation, the Apple TV deal is made, it's getting these games going. And I once they figure out what they have, I truly believe that's going to happen. I don't know. I haven't had no conversations. I come and call games, but they're going to have to identify that they're going to need some soccer people in there to help that process. But it's such an exciting part of it. And you never know. Like someone was joking. I mean, was it Alexi Lalas saying, like, you know, Christian Pulisic is out of contract. And he goes, if the Galaxy really wanted to make a statement, why don't they go bring him back? So it could be this cyclical thing. I don't think Pulisic would come back. But maybe if it was like 3 years, if he was 27 or 20.
I'm friends with Big Red, but I don't respond to him on Twitter.
Okay. Well,
he's not coming. Pulisic's not coming.
The
dynamic is different than it was when Landon came back and Michael Bradley came back and so on. Because some of those guys were not going to, first of all, I would say Pulisic's a different kind of guy from Landon, but really Landon's a different cat.
Altogether. He's a one of a kind.
You know? But the dynamic and the ability for an American player to not succeed at a European club and then go to another European club was not always there in the way that it is now.
Yes, that's true. I just think there might be some upstanding measures. You put the American in there, maybe go, I miss being in the States. I miss being my family and playing in front of my friends and my parents. And they're offering me a ton of money. Because, I don't think it happens. And they probably, but maybe it's a Weston McKennie. Maybe it's someone like that. He says, yeah, maybe I'll go there. I've done great. And this is whatever, $20 million, whatever they could offer him. Something seismic that it would have been interest. I doubt and I agree the situation is very different. I would love to do it. I think MLS would benefit so much from a big American player in the league. But obviously, I don't think Christian Pulisic, the ambition certainly there. And they know it, too. They know it, too, that they have to kind of maintain that level because once it's gone, it's gone. So it would be such an appealing thing. But maybe we saw that with Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore. Granted, they're all around 30 or maybe a little younger, 28.
That's the big part of it, the age.
Yes, and the money. But it's like not a 24, but maybe a 27.
And I'll throw another piece into that puzzle. It was the fact that all three of them came.
Right.
It was just one. I'm not sure it works as well.
Yeah.
And there was two in the East and one in the West, which helped too, because it meant that, you know, these days teams aren't playing every other team anymore. So you can't sell the guy coming to visit. And also, this might be worth noting too. Pulisic's never played in MLS.
No.
The pull might be a little different for him than it was for Dempsey, than it was for Jozy, et cetera. I don't know. I, as I said, I think the dynamic's different now. I also think all the chips are on Messi.
Yeah, I maybe it was a dream, Jonathan, but I saw this MLS logo and it was Messi and Pulisic's face on the cover. And it was comes to play this weekend. I was like, and I woke up.
That would be the ideal two players,
obviously, to bring in if you could. Messi alone would be amazing.
I think it comes back to something that you and I have been discussing throughout this show, which is MLS not being comfortable in its own skin, in a way. And I wish that it would be a little more comfortable in its own skin than it is. Because if it would be, then Don Garber can do what he has said he's going to do, which is go to some of the older teams that are not holding up their end of the bargain and put them in the room and say, you guys need to get moving here.
Yeah.
We've
seen some progress of that. I mean, with New York City FC, the stadium renderings, and that's going to apply pressure on those last two. It's a slow burn, though.
Look at the Red Bulls and the fire.
Yeah.
The fire, and the fire, I suspect if Jim Curtin does not renew his contract in Philadelphia, or if Philadelphia does not renew Jim Curtin, the national team is a factor, obviously, waiting for that to play out, but I'm sure that there are a lot of people in Chicago who would like Jim Curtin to manage the fire and think he can be the savior. And I look at it and say, that team, that roster.
But at least there's help not too far away. And perhaps that is something, I mean, look, the fire, like we saw it with FC Cincinnati, right? They were like, this isn't working. So they went to the Philadelphia Union and they were able to reset things very quickly. But I thank goodness, but that's these trees, these coaching trees, these club trees are so important.
Right.
So it's optimistic. But I knew this was going to happen, Jonathan. We've been gone here forever. There was like eight topics, and I think we've covered two. But I want to know, because we have the Women's World Cup, and you touched on briefly with what the women have been able to do to develop interest and just bulldoze through the competition, as they did 4 years ago. You know, I've had some people here, and we've talked about how seismic this event is going to be, not just because the U.S., but because of all these other countries that have raised their standard, the Germans, the Swedes, the Canadians, Spain, who've come literally out of nowhere to become a world power. I mean, there's seven or eight teams that could win in Australia, New Zealand, beautifully framed down under there. I know we talked a little bit off the air. Watching these games could be tricky because there are some favorable windows, maybe some not so favorable. That might be the only drawback to how well it's received here in the U.S. But I, for one, I mean, we're soccer guys. We're going to be up at whatever hour watching it. And I'm as excited for a world Women's World Cup competition than I've ever been. Any women's sports thing, this is just, I think, the best of the best, really.
I'll say one off the field and one on the field thing. The on the field thing is I don't actually think the U.S. is going to win this one. Germany is my favorite at the moment.
I had a bet with Sarah Walsh last week, who covers for HBO and Turner, and I didn't want to be anti-American, but we had a dinner bet. I said, if the field wins it, you get me dinner. If the U.S. win it, I get you dinner. And I hedged my bets here. I want the U.S. to win, but I have a feeling it's going to be too treacherous to get through the way they've done it in the past.
Everybody thinks that England's going to be the team that dethrones them. I don't, for two reasons. One, I think that England has had a lot of injuries this year. I also think that when it comes down to it, in a knockout semifinal, I'm not sure England has a lot more mental fortitude than they used to, because they won the Euros and they beat the U.S. at Wembley. But I think if I have to pick a one-game knockout, USA-England, I would pick the U.S. However, I think Germany is the team that's going to do it, because they've got a ton of talent. It's pretty young talent, and they don't care about any of the mental stuff. They never have. And I think that might be what gets it done. But if the U.S. makes the final, they will have made four straight Women's World Cup finals. I just think that's outrageous.
Yeah.
If they make the semifinals, they will have made, you know, every semifinal except 2007. It's crazy. And yes. No, even though with the depth of talent in the women's game was not always what it is now, I still think that asking a team to win three World Cups in a row, to make four finals in a row, is a mighty ask. So that's the first part. The second part of it pertains to the consumer interest. And the, you know, yes, the time zones are going to be problematic because, you know, Fox was able to get some of the U.S. games into time slots that are beneficial to the U.S. audience, which is the nighttime here, the afternoon down under. But some of the games, because they're going to be in prime time on the host countries, are going to be at 3 and 4 and 6 in the morning in the States. And that's life when the World Cup or an Olympics, as it was in 2000, is in Australia and the games are all odd hours. But what we know, and what you and I have seen for a long time as we've watched women's soccer grow in this country, from a purely economic perspective, the consumer demand for women's soccer content in the United States is not met. It is not met by the mainstream media. It is starting to be met by the television and the streamers, but it's still not there yet. It is getting there in terms of being met by the NWSL, going back into Los Angeles, having Angel City there obviously helped. San Diego helped. There are a lot more markets that I think can sustain NWSL teams if it's done properly. But the demand for content by the fan base, it's supply and demand, right? The supply does not meet the demand, and we all know this. And mainstream media outlets come along to say, well, how do we harness this? How do we go get it? I say, my friends, I've been doing this for 20 years. Call the people who know how to do it and let them do it.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, it's we're not there where we need to be. And that is such a big way in helping develop interest in this sport. It's some great breakthroughs, but again, still so much room for growth. And I hope I see it in the not too distant future, and certainly in my lifetime. Everything's going to have to match it. But there's so much to be positive we've talked about here, but a lot of things to still cover. We'll enjoy it. Jonathan, we'll enjoy seeing you cover everything. I think we'll have to come back and continue this conversation because it is an endless pot. Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Hey, buddy, thanks for joining me. I think we covered some good ground here.
It's a pleasure. We covered a lot of ground. Hopefully we'll get you out here to call a game with Dunny one of these days. Dunny will tell you that I took him to breakfast at Reading Terminal Market a few years back, introduced him to Scrapple, and he had no idea what it was. But we'll get you here hopefully to call a big game sometime this summer for Apple.
I hope so. I mean, that's on the wish list. And I'm going back to the Zach Steffen article and how Wawa's made into it. And you And I was in Orlando. My sister lives out there, and my father, were talking about playing in there. And there's a Wawa's, and I've driven by it. There's like a few of them. Right. And people from Philadelphia go bananas. I don't understand the euphoria, but I'm not going to try to understand it. I'll respect it. And because everyone is collective on their love for Wawa's.
It's a local institution. And anytime somebody from Philly comes home, it's one of their, because they make all their, we call them hoagies. Everybody else calls them subs. They make it all fresh to order at the counter when you walk in. And people like their coffee and various other things. You guys have, you know, In-N-Out Burger and a few other things that I always get when I'm in LA. So that, you know, everybody's got their local institutions, and that's one of Philly's.
I think I had my last In-N-Out Burger. I know that's sacrilege up here, but I just, I have other options for my burger. But I just thought about it, Jonathan. Christian Pulisic comes back to MLS because he missed his sandwich order to go at Wawa's. Being from the Philadelphia area, he came back.
He, believe it or not, grew up too far. He grew up out of Wawa range, I'll tell you.
Scratch it. Well, I'm glad you were able to sort that out, because I didn't want to tweet that and look like a fool later. But but Jonathan, I appreciate it. A great conversation. Thanks for all you do. It's important work. And I we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. We can sit back and maybe retire early with the piles of money we make covering soccer.
If only.
Wink,
if
wink.
Only. If only. It's great to talk to you, my friend.
Jonathan Tanwell of the Philadelphia Inquirer, jumping out of the business. And we'll be here at stoppage time. And I'm going to tell you why the playoffs are the way to go. Yes, we are talking about playoffs in the stoppage time, and I'm going to do my Allen Iverson impression. It's what we call low-hanging fruit. Playoffs, right? MLS Cup playoffs expanded to 18 teams. Some people say, that's too many. And I'm like, yeah, it probably is too many. So I've been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I have been watching the NBA playoffs, and it doesn't seem like the criticism the MLS Cup playoffs get goes anywhere else. So the criticism is there's too many teams in the playoffs. And the other criticism is that you position yourself to leave the regular season, render the regular season meaningless, as a team that could finish first will get eliminated before a showpiece event. Well, that happened in in hockey. And no one seemed to bring that up. And that happened in NBA, and no one seemed to bring it up. And I know we're competing, MLS competing against other soccer leagues, but the playoffs are a huge success. And what differentiates America, the United States, and in Mexico, and in some other leagues from the rest of the world. So you own it. Like, that's what I've said here, the Soccer OG. We have to adapt to the rest of the world, but sometimes we've got to do it our way. And that's it. And we're not budging. And that's what makes our league and our sport unique and very American, which I approve of. So you have this situation, the Boston Bruins, the top seed, the all-time regular season success story, lose to the Florida Panthers, my hockey team. I don't watch a lot of hockey. I watched my first hockey 2 weeks ago. So that's because the Florida Panthers knock out the top seed. The Milwaukee Bucks, the top seed in the Eastern Conference, they get knocked out by the Miami Heat. The Lakers and the Heat are still in the playoffs, and they're a 7 and an 8 seed. Why are we talking about rendering the regular season meaningless in those sports? You wouldn't fathom that idea, right? And I know they're not. It's different than soccer. So we're looking at it through two different ways. We're looking at it from the American perspective. We're also looking from the European perspective. Playoffs have been great in so many cases. They were great in MLS last year. Granted, it was a smaller playoff. What will the bigger expanded playoff look like? But real quickly about the NBA, you know, 20 teams make the playoffs. Hockey, 16 teams. So it's a similar number. There's actually more higher percentage of teams make the playoffs in the NBA than MLS. Now in Mexico, which also has, more teams make the playoffs, and they have a good system. They're down to their semifinals. Their semifinals are America versus Chivas, the Clásico Nacional, and then the Clásico Regio between Monterrey and Tigres. In other words, pretty much the best possible playoff scenario you could imagine. It fell into place. It doesn't always happen that way. But man, those TV companies are sure happy that they cover, they got what they did this time around. So it's very exciting. So While I agree there's probably too many teams in the MLS Cup playoffs, as a broadcaster, I'm not complaining. There's too many of them. Let's give it a shot. All these playoffs, record viewership. I mean, it's on and up in the NBA. I think they had like 9 million viewers for game six between the Lakers and the Warriors. And then you know, they're all averaging on the up. It's big movements because obviously the big clubs, the big players are what people care about. And we have to develop that in MLS. There's no doubt about it, but we're getting there. So embrace the playoffs. They're fun and they're ours. Soccer OG. Rate, review, download, subscribe. Tell a friend. Check out our library of videos. Check out the Soccer OG on YouTube under my name, Max Bretos. You will see a great variety of topics that I tackle on a regular basis. We are out of time. We'll join you again next week with more great guests. Until then, Placido Domingo.